Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 50. I'm Michelle Malloy Dillon.
And I'm David Langiuli. Hey, Michelle, we've got a really cool guest on the podcast today. It is the Reverend, and I didn't know this about him, the Reverend Dr. Z. Allen Abbott. Allen and I met because we are both members of the Lee Collier chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals. Allen is our president this year, and I'm serving as the treasurer of our local chapter. Mm-hmm. And something about Allen that I came to learn as I reached out to him, I didn't even know this when I asked him to write a blog on our for our audience, was that he's actually a member of the Financial Planning Association. Mm-hmm. And has a keen interest in financial planning. And he wrote a wonderful article for our audience on this topic. And we're going to talk to him about it today. Welcome, Allen.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Great to have you. So it's a great topic. So appropriate for the nonprofit audience. Many of the folks in who follow us on Fundraising Leadership do work in small and medium-sized nonprofits and are starting to think about retirement, are struggling to figure out how they're going to save for retirement. And so we really appreciate the blog post that you wrote that gives them some guidance. So why don't you share with folks like some of your initial thoughts on this?
Well, the reason that I'm passionate about this is because I've lived it. You know, I come from three generations of clergy on each side of my family tree, and they don't make a lot of money. Clergy are terribly underpaid, and the people who work in churches and faith-based organizations are typically paid way below scale. They can make more money, some of them, by going to flip burgers at McDonald's, and yet they're doing it out of devotion, obviously, but out of a commitment to the cause, and they see the impact of what they're doing. And I was a teenager with my parents who were missionaries, and I remember one time when they got a letter that just said, "Dear missionaries, due to adverse economic situations, the funds that are in the retirement account have been depleted." And I just thought, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? How are you going to retire? And they said, well, what can we do? I mean, you know, they're missionaries all around the world. They're not going to file a class action lawsuit against the mission board. I said, this is unjust. And it's, you know, these are the people who are the most committed. They have the biggest hearts. They are working very much at substandard salaries and resources. And they do that voluntarily. These are not the people who should live that meagerly and be punished for making that noble decision, that altruistic decision. And as I grew and served in other arenas, I saw the same thing happening throughout the nonprofit sector. And of course, when you say that, you're talking about everything from a small grassroots startup organization where nobody's getting paid, but you've got 15 people working hours and hours per week, all the way up to a very large foundation or university or something like that. And yet when you compare their salaries for people with their experience and their education and their skills to someone who is in the for-profit sector, it's often starkly different. And I said, you know, these are the folks who I want to help. These are the ones who I identify with, and I don't want them to get to the end of their life and their only option is to live in a double wide in their daughter's yard. You know, I mean, that's, because I've literally seen that sort of a situation before with many of the pastors and others that I've known. And so from a very early age, I started studying personal finance and realized it's not that complicated. You know, there are just a few basic principles worth following. I remember my very first mentor. I was in my first full-time pastorate in Indiana. And for some reason, one of the denominational executives just kind of took a shine into me and started inviting me to join him on different meetings and such. And one day we were in the car together and he said, "Allen, the smartest thing you can do financially is to find out what is the maximum contribution you can make to your retirement account, get there as soon as possible, and stay there for the rest of your career. And you'll be
I love how you're talking about how it's not very complicated, because as soon as you said that, I kind of went, oh, thank goodness. Tell me how it's not complicated, right? Because it can feel so complicated when you're seeing something like your pension disappear.
Right. And speaking about pensions disappearing, where there is this false sense of safety that exists in our culture called Social Security, because it's a false sense of Social Security, because I think you reminded us, Alan, before we got on the podcast, that last year was the first year that, you know, there is more money going out of Social Security that's coming in. Now, it's debatable. We could have a debate about whether Social Security is going to be there or not for the Gen Xers and younger. But let's just say, whether it's there or not, even if it is there, it's not going to get you. It's not going to sustain you in retirement.
Well, it was never created to sustain people in retirement. When it was originally created, they set the retirement age of 65 because most people were dead by then. So they wouldn't be paying out the money. And of course, long before we had the idea of a baby boom even existing. And so now you've got 10,000 people per day entering retirement, tapping their Social Security. And it's a great question for those of us who are still working. I'm thinking, I could call it social insecurity. I'm not sure what's going to be there. Now, I think politically, no politician is going to vote to kill Social Security. That would be, you know, the end of their career. And, you know, most politicians are very short-term oriented anyway. But it's very feasible that they could approve a gradual reduction in benefits.
Yes.
I mean, they've already extended the actual age from 65 up to 67.
Yep.
There will continue to need to be some tightening along Social Security. But the thing is that Social Security is something that your employer pays on a fixed percentage. And it is partially a retirement plan. So it goes to disability and other benefits in case you need them. But it's not going to replace your salary whatsoever.
Right.
At the most, you really can expect it to be maybe 50% of your previous salary. If you're in a low salary bracket, it'll help you more. But the more you make in your living, then the less of a percentage it's going to be of your retirement income.
Yeah. And there's this thing I've been doing a lot of reading about in some of the publications that you suggest that people read if they want to become more personally financially literate. There's a lot of talk these days about you actually are going to need more money than you think.
Yeah.
So a lot of people underestimate what they're like, oh, I'll retire and I won't need as much as much as I'm making today. There's some truth in that, but it's actually you're gonna need a substantial amount of what you're currently making. It turns out we could argue as to what that percentage is. That's where the current conversation is, right?
Right, exactly. And how you're going to get there?
Right.
I mean, I've never made a big salary myself. I've served in religious background mostly. What happened is, you know, I followed some of these basic simple steps. I was persistent. I started early.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't raid the account for frivolous reasons or anything like that. And actually about age 52, I reached the inflection point where my retirement savings would generate an income that was equal to what I was currently earning.
Right.
Okay. Does that make sense? Now, that doesn't mean I wanted to retire at 52. I've still got lots I want to do in the world. Right. And that means that the longer I work, I'm just putting more and more security.
Yeah. So let me unpack. Let's unpack a few things there, because you said them very quickly, and there's some real diamonds. There's actually gold in what you just said. So starting early, I recall, I'll just share one of my stories. I recall my very first job out of university. I'm working. I hadn't really even thought much about saving anything. And one of my friends, good friends, said, "Hey, you know, what are you doing for retirement?" I was like, "You know, what are you talking about?" And I'm in my 20s. He said, "Oh, there's this company," and I'm mentioning Vanguard because I think it happens to be a very good organization, investor owned. He said, "You should look at this and start putting," literally, I started putting money away 35 years ago in a Vanguard account. And that's, I'm sort of at your stage now. I have the freedom to do what I do with Michelle because I saved for 35 years. So what about you, Michelle?
Yeah, well, I started early as well. I was telling Alan before the podcast began that luckily my dad, who was a public school teacher for 30 years, created a second career for himself as a certified financial planner. Oh. And so from a very early age, I was given the advice and the not so subtle nudges to begin saving early.
Right.
No.
And that is the key. It doesn't have to be a lot, right, no. Alan? Like, you do not have to have a big salary.
Right. So, you know, I said something about McDonald's earlier. You know, kudos to McDonald's. They were the first major corporation to sign up their employees for a 401k. Mm. That they had the option to, they could opt out of participating. They didn't have to choose to participate, though. The company just automatically signs them up as soon as they reach the eligibility requirements. They start saving, the company starts saving for them just to teach them, because how many careers started at McDonald's, right? So this mm-hmm. is a way to teach and demonstrate some financial education right there from the very beginning.
And we'd like you start saving, it's a pattern, it's a habit.
Yeah.
That's you the said, thing, like if you can start even with just a little bit and it's just what you do, so you don't miss that income.
In the blog, I give an example of Lori and Peter. Okay, and so Lori, she started at 25 and she saved $2,500 per year in her 403B. And then 10 years later, she moved on to a different job and just left those funds in that 403B. But with an 8% annual return on average, by the time she was 65, there was almost $400,000 in that account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's great. Meanwhile, you take the typical procrastinator, someone who doesn't get started until later. Peter is the name I gave this person, and he waited until he was 35 to start saving. He saved for 30 years. By the time he reaches 65, getting the same 8% average return per year, he only had $300,000 in his account, all right? And it's there is this magic of how things grow quickly over time, yeah. And that's why it is absolutely necessary to start early and be persistent.
Be persistent. Let me just pause on that for a moment also. So being persistent, it's like what you said, Michelle, creating the habit of saving. And I think you said something in the article, Alan, about like when you get that raise, even if you're in a relatively low paying job,
sure.
In the nonprofit world, which many of us are, let's say you get a 3% raise. Well, first of all, that's nice. So, but you didn't need that yesterday. So put that 3% in your savings account. You'll never miss it.
That's right. Put as much of it in there as you can.
And yeah.
Why not?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
There are lots of noble savings goals that we have in life. We need to save for our kids' college. We need to save for our down payment on our first house. These things are right, but you don't have to choose between one or the other. Or prioritize these things and then say, I'm going to get this one done first and then I'm going to move on to that one and move on to that. No, you can, even with a small salary, do little incremental progress on all of those things. Mm. You know, you're not going to just suddenly have 3 to 6 months of your income set aside in an emergency fund from the first year that you work. You know, nobody can save that much money. And you don't really want to try to accomplish all of these at once. One of the best resources that I have personally used, and I've purchased this book in volume and distributed it to college students and seminarians, is called Get a Financial Life by Beth Kotlener. And she writes for Kiplinger's, and it's designed for people who are in their 20s and their 30s, who are just getting started with all this serious adult financial stuff. And here's the wisdom, and it's easily implemented and followed. So I highly recommend that resource. And I just mentioned Kiplinger's magazine. And, you know, it doesn't go very deep or complicated. And so that means after you've been reading it for 4 or 5 years, it starts to kind of repeat itself. But on the other hand, all the financial rules and limits are always updated too. So Kiplinger's, you know, I bought a whole classroom, a subscription to that for $10 each. All right.
Wonderful. I love
That's
that.
That's great. You know,
yeah.
They,
yeah.
they can get started with that and renew it themselves.
I love yeah. that. Yeah. And it really is like an act of personal leadership to take responsibility for your personal finances and for your children, right? Because you so brilliantly mentioned in the article too, you can't take out a loan for retirement. It's not an option.
That's right.
And so starting early and getting proactive about this kind of thing is taking personal responsibility.
Now, I got a moment of confession here. I have taken a loan out of my retirement account on 2 occasions. And I did it because we had one time we had significant medical expenses. One time to purchase our first house. In each case, the rules of engagement were you pay yourself back, you're paying the prime rate plus 1%. So it's steep, which incentivizes you to pay it off early. And I happened to hit it at a time when the market was, very favorable to those conditions. So that as I paid it back, I actually increased the volume of the number of shares and their value as we went along. And so you take out just like a 5-year loan, but you pay it off in 12 months. Mm-hmm. So that is better than going to a bank and adding more debt to that because you're paying them the interest, not yourself.
Right.
Right. So there are some exceptions, but the real important thing is, yeah, start early, be persistent. Life happens, but don't do something stupid with your retirement account. Let me give a story real quick. So often I was working in retirement planning with ministers and church workers and such. And I would encounter, I had, you know, several hundred clients in 6 different states. And one of them calls me up one day and says, you know, I've got a serious problem, very personal problem. And they wanted to take money out of their retirement account to pay this problem off, make it go away. And I said, you know, don't do a distribution from your retirement account. You're less than 59 and a half. You've got taxes. You've got a penalty to consider. You know, it's gonna devastate your future earnings on this. I said, on the other hand, you could take out a loan, but you've got to pay it back. Mm-hmm. All right. If you don't pay it back, if you default on the loan, then the IRS says that wasn't a loan, that was a distribution, and you're going to get hit with the penalty and the taxes mm-hmm. on top of that. And so it's a worse situation. So and unfortunately, a lot of the people who took out loans for emergency situations didn't come up with a plan to replenish that quickly.
Right.
And therefore ended up with it being
right.
distribution.
Yeah. So a cautionary note about taking loans out from employer retirement plans. And you did mention also in the article, pay yourself first. And this is where the IRS is on your side. It is about the only time I can share that the IRS is actually on your side. When, even if your employer does not have a retirement plan,
right.
what you say in the article is you can set up your own IRA or you can set up a Roth IRA and you can start paying yourself first and those monies grow tax free. You do not pay any tax on them. Hello.
Right.
Until you retire.
That's right.
So even if you're working
tax free when you're retired too, if it's a Roth.
And if it's a Roth, it's tax free when you retire.
Hello?
So there are lots of good organizations out there where, you know, you can set these products up. We're not here to recommend any particular organization.
But you know who they are.
And so if you had to give the audience something to try, what would it be, Alan? Like, if no matter what stage of life they're at.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It is wise that they look at, because you can do an IRA, you can do two IRAs, you can do multiple IRAs all throughout your career. And that will only supplement the things that are going on through your employer and Social Security. And it's a great, you know, I've never made a big salary. Let me put it just very bluntly. I've never made a big salary. But yet I achieve financial security and I feel really good about the future. And I'm working now because I want to, not because I have to. Mm-hmm. And so I'm enjoying that at an earlier stage in life than others. How much should you save up for retirement? Yeah, it is kind of a slippery figure. Many factors, and it's different for everybody.
How do you figure that out?
Well, there are some benchmarks as to where you need to be at different stages in your life, and these are easily found, and like Kiplinger's in the book I mentioned. But the minimal threshold that you should need to have saved by the time you retire is approximately 10 times your annual salary. Okay, so if you're 27 and you're thinking, well, wait a minute, that's 40 years from now. I have no idea what I'm going to be making. Of course you don't. Okay, so let's just play it real conservative. Just put down your salary on an Excel spreadsheet and your age. This year, you're 27 and this is your salary. You're making $48,000, right? In the next block down, you just add your age for next year. 28 and then 29 and so forth all the way to 67 or 70. And then just add 1.03, you know, multiply the previous number for your salary by 1.03. So you're adding 3% each year. Mm-hmm. You're saying if I stayed at this salary for the rest of my life and all of my raises were an average of 3% per year, let Excel do the math and it'll show you this magnificent number at the bottom. Wow, I'm gonna make that kind of money. Well, yeah, but by then it'll still be the same, you know, worth about the same as your current salary. But then you can multiply that number by 10.
Right.
Easy. Just add a zero and you can see that's how much I need to save. Now, for years, it was kind of $1 million is what you need to have saved. You know, that was like the ideal figure, round enough for everybody to easily figure out, well, okay, this is how much I have saved up. How close am I getting to $1 million? Well, you know what? $1 million isn't what it used to be. You know, the value of a dollar slowly depreciates every year. So you've got to be increasing it incrementally. But if you can reach that point where you have 10 times your current salary saved into retirement accounts, you're good. Right. You're on track. When I was doing retirement planning, I would help people get to 16 times their annual salary. And I got to tell you, one of the most rewarding things that I've ever been able to do in my career is I'm sitting across the kitchen table from a teacher or a social worker, and we're trying to figure out when they can retire. And so we're looking at all their retirement assets, right? And then you figure out debt and all this other stuff, you know. Punch in the numbers on the computer, and I would turn the laptop around and show them what they could make if they retired today. And sometimes that number was bigger than what they were currently earning.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they would lean back and say, oh my gosh, I never dreamed I'd be a millionaire.
Yeah, right. Awesome.
And I said, so, but it takes a long time of persistence and being deliberate about it.
Yeah,
right.
Bashing away, you know, get an extra check. Let's say you get a royalty for an article that you wrote or a book or something. You get an honorarium for a speaking engagement.
Put it right into that retirement
put
account.
It in there.
That's right. Absolutely.
Don't go spending it. You know, put it over there.
And so I hear this.
When you retire, it's going to be a heck of a lot larger. Yeah.
So I hear this this call to action for our audience today is sit down and make that spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Take a look at the salary that you're making today. Give yourself that cost of living increase every year until the time that you want to retire. Multiply it by 10 or more, right?
And that's your number.
That's your number.
And here's the other thing. Let me just add one little thing to that. don't be discouraged or daunted by that. That number might look big, but if you follow the advice that Alan shares in the blog post, start early, be persistent, get your Kiplinger's subscription so you can educate yourself about strategies for saving and compounding. I don't even want to get into the topic of compounding, but it's a good thing for you guys to learn about so you can see it's not that daunting to do this.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank All right. you, Alan. This was yeah. wonderful. Well, so many great tips here.
Thank you. And maybe yeah. we all have a good retirement one day.
Absolutely. Oh,
may we all.
You know, I want to be able to have enough money to where I can be extraordinarily generous.
Yeah, right. You know, I love that.
Let me just share one more vignette. I'm yeah. blessed right now. I'm working in a retirement community. I'm the philanthropy director. And I've got 600 residents who live here. These are retirees. Many of them are high net worth individuals, to be honest. And they look at me, sometimes they say, what am I supposed to do? I didn't ever dream I'd have $4 million. Mm-hmm. What can I do with that? And I said, so it's my job as an ethical fundraiser to help discern what are their values? What is the impact that they want to have, the lasting change in the world that they would like to make, and help put that together. Whether I'm the person who is the beneficiary of, you know, the numbers coming in for me, or if I connect them to another nonprofit, but being able to help them fulfill their lifelong dreams.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What a great way to end our podcast today, Alan, because how we use our money can be how we live our values as well. Mm-hmm. And so being aware of what we can create later in life is so important.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Shall you bring us home,
We'll bring
Michelle?
You home. So thanks for listening today. And please subscribe to our podcast at Fundraising Leadership if you haven't already. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Now go put it into practice. Yeah.